This program may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Derek walks you through how to win government jobs and contracts, effectively manage your government career, and best utilize government services. Every week on Fed Access, you'll learn about interesting federal agencies, workers, and jobs. Fed Access provides you the access you need to succeed in the federal government. And now your host, Derek T. Dortch.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm sure if you heard the news, you have to be alive. If you haven't heard the news, Bin Laden has been killed. He's been found in a compound in Pakistan, in a small affluent town that is in Pakistan. He's been hiding out for maybe, we don't know how long, for maybe months, maybe years. But he's finally been found and finally been killed. And now, what's the next move in terms of terrorism? You know, what's going to happen in terms of terrorism? Is Al-Qaeda dead? Are there other groups who will fill in the void of Al-Qaeda? Is the threat level for the United States and other Western countries or even other countries in the Middle East, are those threat levels going to go down? Are they going to increase? What's going to happen with terrorism? We're going to talk about that today with Fred Burton. He's a vice president at Strat4, and he's the author of the new book, Chasing Shadows, which is a book I'll let Fred talk about towards the end of the show. But we're going to talk about terrorism right now. Thanks, Fred, for coming back on Fed Access.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's great to be back.
Hey, you know, Fred, you've been monitoring this. I know at Strat4, you guys really keep an eye on terrorism issues, on Al-Qaeda, Bin Laden. Tell us what this means in terms of the killing of Osama Bin Laden.
I think there's enough remaining in the grassroots to be concerned about, predominantly, Derek, in the soft target arena. And I would drill down specifically and say that within the soft target arena, what you're looking at is mass transportation, the subway system, for example, in Washington, D.C., New York City, the Amtrak corridor that runs between Washington and as far north as Boston, predominantly here in the continental United States. And then as you look overseas in the soft target arena, major hotels in the Middle East would certainly be vulnerable. And then as you look into Pakistan, that's where the potential flashpoint could exist for some degree of retaliation on U.S. government personnel in country.
You know, with this being the case, I see everybody's on the major news channels, whether it be CNN or MSNBC or Fox, are talking about some kind of major blow to Al-Qaeda. You know, given, and I know, Fred, you guys do a lot of detailed analysis, given where Osama bin Laden was at and given the kind of the nature of, that we hadn't heard from him for quite some time, was he in a command and control position of Al-Qaeda, or was he basically kind of on a hideout mode, or, you know, what's the take on how much control was he having in terms of the day-to-day operations of Al-Qaeda?
Not very much. The organization, which we call Al-Qaeda Prime, that attacked us on 9/11, are no longer that kind of command and control organization that they once were, predicated predominantly on the very effective disruption of the command and control element at the top in Afghanistan. So the organization is very much fractured. The real concern would be Bin Laden's number two, al-Zawahiri, who's still on the loose, and he is believed to be the tactical planner of attacks. That's one of the concerns as you think about more larger-scale, sophisticated attacks on U.S. soil in Europe and Pakistan and elsewhere. But Bin Laden being killed doesn't necessarily stop Al-Qaeda from wanting to target and kill us.
Does that mean, you know, and you know, as we know, a lot of times these terrorists have a mindset of martyrdom. They have a mindset of, you know, if they're killed, they go to a different level of stature. And part of their nature is that, hey, listen, I want to die for my cause. Does the killing of him, you know, raise the stakes, or does it make him a martyr in terms of, you know, how he's looked at? Or does it now kind of just make them more afraid of, oh, I'm next?
I think that that decision making contributed to the reasons for why we did the burial at sea, so to speak, so there would not be a set location that individuals could rally around and be the center of gravity for some sort of martyrdom. That's a tough decision. I'm glad I didn't have to make it. I don't know what you do with his body.
Yeah.
But as you think about this from the concept of who Bin Laden is, I think for the past 20 years, long before 9/11, he was killing Americans and Muslims and other Westerners. So,
and this was during the time period when you were, the deputy director of counterterrorism at the State Department Diplomatic Security Service. He was, attacking. They were attacking embassies and they were attacking Americans all over the world.
Most certainly, so he has written his name in infamy when it comes to being a center of terrorism gravity. So, his legend will certainly live on, and I think it's going to be a very, very interesting next 3 to 4 days till we see what kind of reaction is going to be provoked. Are we going to see that lone individual with something as simple as a pistol into a soft target environment? Will we see backpack bombs now deployed on mass transportation systems? So there is no doubt that that's the driver behind most of these global alerts today, and concerns for things that are very geographic to you, such as the heightened concern for the D.C. subway due to the symbolism with stops like the Pentagon, Foggy Bottom, as well as Arlington National Cemetery.
That's right. That's right. I want to talk about those as we go a little bit deeper into this show. But Fred, looking at the analysis of Pakistan, I was just kind of running through yesterday all of the different terrorists who have basically been found and killed. There's been a large number who have been found and killed in Pakistan, since 9/11. What's the deal with that, Fred? I mean, we keep on having this kind of debate on is Pakistan on our side or are they not on our side? Do they know? Do they not know? Based on your analysis at Strat4 and other takes on it and the people you've been talking to, what is our take on Pakistan?
I think if you look at Pakistan, it has a very challenging geopolitical situation. Having said that, there are no friendly intelligence services. And I think that as you look at that with a precept that I know for a fact, and when we captured Ramzi Yousef again in Islamabad, that if we had gone to the Pakistanis ahead of time, Ramzi Yousef never would have been captured. And I have no doubt that same decision-making tree was used in this case, that we simply can't go to the Pakistanis and ask for their help. There's too much chance for failure. And I think that that's because there are still elements within Pakistan, specifically their intelligence service and military, that are very much anti-American. And when you start thinking of this from a tradecraft perspective, Derek, when you choose a safe house, you choose a safe house in a location where you control the geography. And I find that very, very troubling to the fact that Bin Laden has been literally hiding in Pakistan at that one specific location for a good number of years.
That's right.
And I think those kinds of questions need to be asked of the Pakistani ambassador to the United States, Pakistani president, and I think that the diplomatic relations between our two countries will continue to deteriorate because of this.
With that being the case, and I think you just brought up a very, very good point, because it was very troubling to me, because it seemed as if Osama bin Laden was almost in, like you said, a safe house, as if he was a witness protection program that the U.S. Marshals would put somebody in, where you change identity and put them in a location where no one would suspect them to be. What we're saying is it would be impossible for him to be at that location without Pakistan, without somebody within intelligence or the military apparatus within Pakistan to know that he was there.
I would say so. The intelligence aspect of my background and what I do now and just my days of being in this arena, I find it highly unlikely that he would have been able to hide in that location for so many years without a good number of people being aware of that within the Pakistani government.
Do you think that somebody gave him up, or do you think it was just a matter of, you know, good intelligence on our, you know, where we were, you know, did follow the courier. We followed our own kind of a tracings of his whereabouts, or was somebody in Pakistan, did they say, listen, we're going to give you this negative information if you give us something?
I think two things contributed to this. One, I've seen one report where the safe house he was taken in had actually been used before by Al-Qaeda.
Right.
Now, some would say, well, that's kind of stupid. But if you think about it in the mindset and the operational capabilities of Al-Qaeda, they have historically used trusted communications and logistical channels. They have gone back to their networks in the past. So it makes sense to me that this location had been mapped and databased for future reference. Then all of a sudden you get lucky based on good intelligence work out of Gitmo that leads you to the courier. And then from there, all you have to do is map both and track both. And I think it was just very good targeting analysis. It was done by the military, JSOC, along with the CIA. And I think it was a brilliant intelligence operation. And there probably are some human assets in play that that will never see the light of day here that contributed with pieces of intelligence that, that have come into play to marry up the courier and the safe house. But then when you think about it from the standpoint of literally a needle in a haystack and the work that's been done over a 10-year time period to get to where we are today, that's the real success of the counterterrorism community today that we didn't have on September the 10th, 2001.
We're talking to Fred Burton. He's vice president for STRAT4. He's former deputy director of counterterrorism at the Diplomatic Security Service of State Department. He's also the author of a book called Chasing Shadows and also another book called Confessions of a Counterterrorism Agent. You can find those on Amazon.com. We'll be right back after this break. We're going to keep on talking about the subject of terrorism, about the impact of bin Laden, and also what the future of terrorism is, and, you know, should we be concerned about what's next? You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch from Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll be right back after this break.
Here's Cheryl Rogers, Director of the Office of IT Optimization and the Office of the Assistant Administrator for Information Services and CIO at the Federal Aviation Administration on the Federal Executive Forum on Virtualization and Data Center Consolidation, sponsored by Unisys.
The other challenge that I'm spotting around data center consolidation, we still have a lot of systems that really were designed and architected around a decentralized environment. And so you can't just automatically, you know, just right. yank those things right. up and just throw them into the cloud.
Are you making the right moves? Consolidating government data centers and moving to the cloud aren't easy, especially against a backdrop of continued budget cuts. Unisys enables CIOs to manage all of the IT delivery models across their enterprise within a single integrated management framework, helping clients to plan, design, and implement mission-critical cloud solutions cost-effectively. See how Unisys can help you evolve to the new government enterprise at unisys.com/hybrid enterprise. That's unisys.com/hybrid enterprise.
Here's another question from the Geico Savings Mailbag.
Jason from Buffalo writes, I have a habit of hitting snooze and not being able to get up again. Any suggestions?
You know, if you get Geico to help with your renter's insurance, it's quite easy, really. You'll know you're protecting your stuff for as little as $12 a month, which I suspect will make you sleep much sounder. Then you'll just pop out of bed rested, ready to start your day.
What he's saying is, a renter's policy is basically insurance for your snooze button.
Plus most everything else you own.
Visit Geico.com to see how affordable renter's insurance can be.
The FedCloud blog on federalnewsradio.com takes a look at the issues surrounding cloud computing through the eyes of those who are using it every day. We'll share with you the challenges, opportunities, and lessons learned from some of the top minds in the world of federal IT. Collaborate with others and help shape the discussion on cloud computing at the FedCloud blog on federalnewsradio.com or follow the FedCloud blog on Twitter. The FedCloud blog is sponsored by Cisco and Intel.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Arink. Fort Campbell in Kentucky is expected to be the scene of a visit today by President Obama. He's scheduled to meet with some of those involved in the military assault that killed Osama bin Laden. Fort Campbell is home to the 160th Special Operations Aviation Regiment, which participated in the raid. A team of Navy SEALs raided the compound in Pakistan. He was later buried at sea. Authorities are now combing through the effects he left behind. I'm J.J. Green.
There's a saying that lightning never strikes the same place twice. Airport operators know that's not the case, which is why they rely on ARINC to provide the most advanced lightning warning systems available. It allows personnel to get to safety, then back out on the tarmac in the shortest amount of time to keep you moving. For more information and career opportunities, log on to ARINC.com.
Listen next week for a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, Conversation with Authors, exploring national security, power, and intelligence in the 21st century. What is smart power? How do 21st century challenges demand a reshaping and redefining of global leadership? And how best can national security leaders transform the intelligence enterprise to meet today's needs? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these questions and so much more with Professor Joseph Nye, author of The Future of Power, next week on the Business of Government Hour.
How will federal managers improve program performance within the tight budget environment? Find out from Agency Leaders and Excellence in Government, the premier best practices conference for federal managers, May 23rd at the Ronald Reagan Building. Early bird rates are available through April 29th. Don't miss the event that federal managers say best prepares them to excel. Register now at excel.gov.com.
Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Deutsch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you just joined us, we've been talking about the impact of the killing of Osama bin Laden and also the impact of that on the whole dynamics of terrorism and where we're going to go from here in terms of terrorism, any kind of terrorist groups that we should be concerned about. Fred, we're talking to Fred Burton. And before I can talk to you, Fred, we're talking to Fred Burton. He's vice president for STRATFOR, and he's also former deputy director of counterterrorism at the Diplomatic Security Service for the State Department. He's also the author of a book called Chasing Shadows. He's with me on the phone right now. Fred, you know, with this whole dynamic of Pakistan and this relation, you were talking about that in the previous segment about we probably may have a deteriorating situation with Pakistan. Is that a big area of concern given the number of terrorists that have come? I mean, I look at Pakistan on a regular basis, and I'm very, very surprised at the number of attacks that go on internally within Pakistan. But also we've had impacts of India being concerned about Pakistan, about the attacks on Mumbai, other areas being concerned, Afghanistan being concerned about Pakistan. If our situation with Pakistan deteriorates, what does that mean?
Well, it's troubling for us as a nation. Remember, you also have a country that is nuclear. And you think about just the logistics network and the impact and ramifications to our military operations in Afghanistan. And if you go back to, from a historical perspective, and look at the critical importance of Pakistan with our role and efforts, battling the Soviets back in the day in this time period, that geography is very, very critical. Now, as you look at this, though, with the war on al-Qaeda, with the demise now of bin Laden, you have to start thinking, where are the other high-value targets located? Are they in Pakistan? Is al-Zawahiri in Pakistan, or is he in Afghanistan? So you're back to the same issues of going down the pecking order to try to locate the individuals. Now, to me, the fascinating geopolitical question here is this. Let's say, for the sake of argument, we find Dr. al-Zawahiri in Pakistan. What do we do then? And you're the Pakistani government now that have stood by and watched a U.S. Special Operations Force come in and literally invade your country and kill the world's most wanted terrorist. What are they sitting around the table thinking? Who do they turn to at this point in time and say, we don't want the Americans to do this again. This is an embarrassment. What do we do?
Now, do they take upon their own initiative, and then do they go out and take the terrorists out themselves? Or, I mean, what is the reason to have these terrorists in country? I mean, is it a financial benefit? Is it an ideology benefit? I mean, people will look at this and they'll wonder, well, why in Pakistan are people, the intelligence service and the military? I mean, yes, they say they may hate America, but America provides what, $20 billion of resources to Pakistan in terms of whether it be military aid or other aid. I mean, what is the ideology on that keeps these terrorists in Pakistan as a safe haven?
I think there's enough grassroots support that provides these logistical networks and safe havens and just a general distaste for America that is inside of Pakistan, which goes back for many, many years now, and that it's really conducive. It's almost a test lab for much of our failure at times. And I think that it's historically just been a breeding ground for generation after generation of al-Qaeda, and it's very easy for these folks to blend back into that environment and safe haven. And that's the question, though, from the standpoint of our look at Pakistan. But if you think about this in concept of what do the Pakistanis do now to go after these al-Qaeda high-value targets, it's going to be interesting to see what road they take.
Do you think that with this being a case, I mean, what's the solution? We killed bin Laden. Is the solution more diplomatic ties with Pakistan in terms of where we can possibly change some of the mindset of some of the people? I mean, I know in the matter of kind of statecraft and also using tradecraft, as we think about our foreign policy and we think about our national security, we can't just, killing all terrorism is not completely the complete solution, because it seems like they pop back up like roaches, it seems. But is the solution now to build more of an influence within country, or what do we do, Fred?
Well, it seems if you look at this over time, at least since President Zia perished, our relationship has been deteriorating, and we really have never had a good handle on diplomacy in country. Now, is this a failure part on the part of Foggy Bottom and the State Department or the various administrations, or is this a Pakistani foreign ministry failure? I think there's probably a fair amount of dysfunction in both that has caused this, but these are highly complex issues, meaning the interests of Pakistan is one that is critical for the national security of our country as we look at our geopolitical interests in the region. Having said that, the Pakistanis are going to have a difficult time trying to go it alone without our economic aid. And I have no doubt that as you look at the blowback of the bin Laden safe haven and killing in country, that there's going to be those kinds of questions asked on Capitol Hill, is why are we funding this country if they're providing this kind of safe haven for these al-Qaeda terrorists? And what better example do you have than the poster child of terrorism at this point in time being taken down in their own backyard?
So we're talking about really, like you said, a situation that probably is going to get worse before it gets better.
I think so. I think that we're at a very, very critical time. Today, the Pakistanis have publicly admitted that they dropped the ball. It was a failure on their part. Look, our country is we've had these failures in the past,
right,
with 9/11. We've had extraordinarily difficult intelligence failures as a nation in the past. You know, what ball do the Pakistanis pick up now and run with? Is it going to be one where they're going to work with us as a partner and help us hunt down the rest of these individuals, or are they going to continue down the path thus far since 9/11 of at times helping, but for the most part not, which has forced us to go it alone?
Do you think that in future tactical situations or in future kind of intelligence operations, we're going to have to go it alone more and more and more, whether it be Pakistan or whether it be other countries, whether it be Yemen or whoever the case is, are we going to have to start going it alone more?
I think so. I think that as you look at this from a counterterrorism perspective, especially with the Arab uprisings in the Middle East, that you at times lose liaison windows, meaning whether it be Jordan, Egypt, Morocco, Saudi Arabia, wherever else you may be, that when they're more focused on internal unrest and internal chaos in their countries, there's less time to focus on what's of interest to the United States of America. So your meetings are postponed, you don't get the callbacks that you need, and so forth. So as you think about this, though, we invariably are going to continue with our very robust relationship with countries such as the UK with MI5 and MI6 and the Canadians and the Australians. But at the end of the day, one could certainly argue that we have always been going this problem alone, simply because we are the 1,000-pound gorilla in this arena.
Wow. We're talking to Fred Burton. He's a vice president for Stratfor. He's also the author of a book called Chasing Shadows and also a book called Confessions of a Counterterrorism Agent. And he's also the former deputy director of counterterrorism at the Department of State Diplomatic Security Service. When we come back, we'll be talking about what's the impact on the United States of America. I know, Fred, we talked about kind of the soft target scenario, but what should we be concerned about? How much vigilance should we have right now? And what should we be doing in order to prevent terrorism on our shores again? We'll be right back after this break. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Why should you take krill oil and omega-3 fish oil? Well, if you are concerned about any of the following, you should absolutely be taking both. And if you qualify, we'll even give you a risk-free trial of a pharmaceutical-grade fish oil combined with the super antioxidant power of krill. But first, you have to answer yes to one of the following. Are you concerned about your joint health? What about your memory and focus? Are you concerned about your heart health? Well, if you want to increase your joint comfort by 28% in just 7 days and promote memory, focus, and heart health, we're going to give you a free bottle of Krill Omega-3 Fish Oil. Just call this toll-free number and claim yours. 1-800-900-6118. We guarantee once you try Krill Omega-3, you won't believe the difference. That's why we're going to send you a free bottle just for calling. Call now for your free bottle and start easing sore joints today. Call 1-800-900-6118. 1-800-900-6118. 1-800-900-6118.
It's the only program of its kind in the world. A unique opportunity to help strengthen our country's defense and further your career. The National Defense Executive MBA at George Mason University's School of Management. The only executive MBA degree tailored to developing leaders and managers in the U.S. defense industry. A unique combination of high-caliber executive business education, defense industry-specific knowledge, and hands-on learning designed to accelerate your career in the military, government, and corporate defense sectors. All without the career interruption of a traditional degree. Learn more at som.gmu.edu/defense. That's som.gmu.edu/defense. Do it today because the last day to apply for the fall semester is July 15th. The National Defense Executive MBA at George Mason University, helping our country's defense, advancing your career.
This week's Kaiser Permanente Experts in Health topic is eye health, featuring Dr. Cheryl Keyes, Chief of Ophthalmology for Northern Virginia for the Mid-Atlantic Permanente Medical Group.
Eye strain has become one of the leading office-related health complaints. Here are five steps you can take to reduce computer eye strain at work. Dim the lights. Excessively bright lighting can cause computer eye strain. Blink more often. Every 20 minutes, slowly blink 10 times. This helps re-wet your eyes, keep them comfortable, and your vision sharp. Relax your eyes and take frequent breaks. Every 30 minutes, look away from your computer and gaze at something far away. Adjust the top of your monitor so that the screen is slightly below eye level. You can then view it comfortably with your head and neck in a natural position. Get a computer eye exam. According to the National Institute of Occupational Safety and Health, computer users should have yearly eye exams. Ask your doctor about these and other tips to help you take care of your eyes. Be well and thrive.
To learn more about Kaiser Permanente's Experts in Health, visit kp.org/midatlantic and click Meet Our Doctors.
IT professionals and graduates from around the country have a lot to say about their experiences from the online Masters in Information Systems from UMBC, the University of Maryland, Baltimore County.
My current title is Chief of Technology. That was one of the things that I was actually looking for, was to have Chief or Officer within my position title.
Apply today for our upcoming semester. For more information, call 1-800-353-UMBC or visit us online at onlinems.umbc.edu.
Hey, it's the Geico Gecko. Now, as a federal employee, you're probably one for a smart presentation, so I've put together some charts and graphs here. There you go. That will help illustrate the money you could save by switching to Geico. First thing you'll notice is that Geico offers discounts to most federal employees GS7 or above. Now, this is big news.
But that shouldn't come as any surprise from a car insurance company that has been serving government employees since 1936. And as you can see on this graph here, it's probably why we're the third largest car insurance company in the nation. Yeah, no, I do actually realise you can't see these, but trust me, they're rather impressive. Especially the 97% customer satisfaction rate. And when you consider it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more, well, all you GS7 employees or above should just contact GEICO. Tell them, Mike.
Hey, folks, this is Mike Causey, and the Gecko said it best. Most federal employees, GS7, the equivalent or above, could get a discount on their car insurance. Just call GEICO at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local GEICO office to see how much you could save.
Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Deutsch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We've been talking about terrorism, the impact of the killing of Osama bin Laden on the whole dynamic of terrorism, on Al-Qaeda, on what's going to happen next in terms of terrorism and the whole United States and also the whole world. We're talking to Fred Burton. He's a vice president of STRATFOR. STRATFOR is a strategic intelligence service, its own kind of private intelligence. They call them the private CIA. Is that right, Fred? What you call it about the private CIA?
Yes, well, certain media outlets have referred to us as the shadow CIA
the
private CIA.
That's right. He's the vice president for STRATFOR, Strategic Intelligence Service, and he's also the former deputy director of counterterrorism at the Diplomatic Security Service at Department of State. He's also the author of a book called Chasing Shadows that you can find on various outlets, Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, and other outlets as well. Fred, in terms of the threat here, you know, we talked about the kind of the soft target, and we've just recently seen with an attack in Morocco where a restaurant was detonated. A number of people were killed, including tourists, I think Canadian tourists, and maybe some other people from other areas. What's the threat here? Should we be concerned about a restaurant? Should we be concerned about the transit? Should we be concerned about all these other soft targets, hotels? You know, where is the possible targeting of Americans going to happen?
As you look at our domestic security, there's two issues that trouble me. One is, again, the soft target mass public transportation concerns, which I think is very geography specific, Washington, D.C. and New York. Secondly, you can't lose sight over the spillover violence from our southern border, predominantly from Mexico. The world has been focused on bin Laden and Al-Qaeda today, but the growing violence in Mexico is one that is extraordinarily troubling. You have hand grenades coming into South Texas, for example, and in the hands of street gangs. You have scores of weapons that can boggle the mind that are flowing into Mexico. You have assassins from Mexico coming into the U.S. and killing rival drug gangs. You have the creation of car bombs in Mexico that are getting more sophisticated. In fact, their ramp-up time for how quickly they were capable of putting together an actual VBID or car bomb far surpasses the other workings of groups like Hezbollah and Al-Qaeda that has done that. So,
and we're also seeing technical capability in terms of underwater submarines. I mean, we're seeing unique capabilities that almost a military would have.
We have, and the one difference being, for the most part, is these cartels aren't killing most people that you or I associate with. Therefore, they're not getting a lot of attention to the scope and the kind of people that they are killing.
Hmm.
But as you talk to some of the homicide detectives in most of your major cities around the Southwest, the West Coast, the Southeast, they'll tell you that gang-on-gang Mexican-driven violence is very much a concern and a growing threat.
Should we put these Mexican cartels, should we put them in the same category as a terrorist organization? I mean, I know I've seen a lot of, people, keep on saying that we should make them, designated as a terrorist organization so that we can dedicate new resources, whether it be the military or Homeland Security resources or the CIA in terms of focusing in terms of destroying these cartels.
I very much believe so. I know Congressman Michael McCaul from Texas has proposed the designation of cartels as foreign terrorist organizations. I think as you look at the definition of terrorism, they certainly fall in those parameters. They have entire communities threatened. They have disrupted public safety. They have the flight of citizens into our country, which is another issue. And you have an extraordinarily complex issue here because, depending upon who you talk to, the matter is always thrown in the same pot as the immigration issue. I think that as we can move closer to the 2012 elections in our country as well as in Mexico, you're going to see more laser focused on this issue and concerns for the growing violence. I know, being Texas-based and doing a lot of work along the border, that this is an issue that most of America, though it's growing, really has no concept in as to how bad it really is. There's cross-border kidnappings. There's child prostitution. When any of these massage parlors, for example, are raided in Texas, Arizona, and California, they're all underage girls from Mexico. So there's human trafficking. There's child pornography, there's drugs, there's weapons. It's a criminal enterprise, Derek, that far exceeds the scope of any one agency today that we have that works for the U.S. government.
Do you think that these cartels are even more volatile in terms of their violence, in terms of their method? I mean, you know, as you look at Mexico, you know, we've been seeing these mass graves. We've been seeing people's heads being found, decapitation all the time. Just on a just every once in a while, but on a regular basis, are these cartels, are they capable of even more violence than maybe an Al-Qaeda or Al-Shabaab or other organizations like that?
I think that it's on the same par. And the reason I say that is this. These organizations are very robust criminal enterprises, and they clearly will move anything for the right price. There used to be a belief, which is now very dated and old, that these cartels would not want to run the risk of, let's say, facilitating Al-Qaeda operatives or Al-Shabaab operatives in the United States. They could care less about that. It's all about money. They get more money to move into the United States a special interest alien. They get less money to move in a Mexican national. So there's a financial incentive to move into the United States other than Mexicans, OTMs, or special interest aliens, Pakistanis, Afghanis. And a lot of these folks, you have no idea where they come from and what their true intent and purposes are into the United States. That's one of the issues that we as a nation have no grasp on. This is just not an immigration issue. This is a national security problem that nobody is really focused on. I work on this issue every day here in Texas, and you talk to the sheriffs on the border, and they will paint a picture for you that's totally divergent from what one that comes out of DHS in Washington.
Why is that, though, Fred? I mean, as you look at this picture, and I see it a lot because I see the news reports on it, but why are we not taking more of a critical role with this? I mean, and you pointed out a good point about the trafficking of people, about them smuggling people into the United States, you know, like you said, other than Mexicans. If it's for the right dollar amount, whether it be $1 million or whatever the amount is, they'll go ahead and do it because they're about the money. And also, we're talking about the war on drugs, which has also been a failed war throughout many years, going back, you know, how long now? You know, we have a major drug enterprise who's smuggling cocaine, crack, and everything else into the United States. Not only that, and killing a lot of Americans. Why hasn't this been taken more serious?
I think it's at the scope, Derek, that it far exceeds what we as a nation can combat. And I think it's that broad, meaning you have so many different elements that are in play here that most of America views as simply as a law enforcement problem. Well, it's not. You've got the drug demand issue here in North America, the United States and Canada. You've got extraordinary amount of politics surrounding this issue, depending upon where you are on the gun side of the house. You've got the gun lobby versus the anti-gun lobby. You've got the demographics of large voting blocks, Hispanic voting blocks, which is growing. So you got an issue that it's so complex here that most of America wants to say, well, this is just a law enforcement problem. We just need more Border Patrol agents. Well, that's not a solution. This is just not a law enforcement entity. And in essence, as you look at how we're approaching this from a tactical perspective on the border, you have every government agency under DHS and the Department of Justice literally running very siloed operations because of concerns for compromise, metrics. It's not about the quality of information or intelligence you collect. It's about the quantity. So you have a very dysfunctional kind of approach as a nation to the border problem.
Wow. We're talking to Fred Burton. He's vice president for Stratfor. He's also the author of a book called Chasing Shadows. He's the former deputy director of counterterrorism at the Department of State's Diplomatic Security Service. On our last segment, we're going to kind of keep on going with this about what is at stake in terms of now the new threat. And maybe the new threat is Mexico and the cartels, but also what else is out there. And then, Fred, I just want you to talk about the book real quick before we close out on the last segment as well. You're listening to Federal News Radio. You listen to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch. We'll be right back after this break.
Nurse means noble. Nurse means selfless. Mothers nurse their children. You nurse someone back to health. If there were ever a group of people more on the give side of the give-take continuum, it would be news to us. I mean, why does one become a nurse? Because working 8 at night to 10 in the morning is so appealing? Because the glamour of day-to-day encounters with a wide variety of bodily fluids is too much to resist? Nurses are nurses because their capacity to care is colossal. Their sympathy, superhuman. Even when you try to act all steely and businesslike, you can't fool us. We still see the love in the tough. We can still hear that gargantuan heart all squishy with compassion thumping away. So while too often you yield the spotlight for just this moment, we're asking all the nurses out there to do what clearly doesn't come natural and take a bow. Kaiser Permanente. May our 45,000 nurses all live long and thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
This audio puzzle is brought to you by Quest Government Services. Identify the federal agency problem. The answer? Too many leaks. Quest Security Solutions will help you pinpoint the cracks in your defenses and keep your critical data from seeping out. For a free risk assessment, visit quest.com/federal. That's quest.com/federal.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on Federal News Radio at 10 a.m. This week, my special guest is Steve Shannon, principal at Odin Feldman & Pittleman and a member of the firm's litigation practice group. We've got some interesting topics for you, so tune in. The show is brought to you by Odin Feldman & Pittleman, a full-service law firm located in Fairfax, Virginia. Visit us on the web at ofplaw.com and visit my blog at blueprintforwealth.org.
Why should you take krill oil and omega-3 fish oil? Well, if you're concerned about any of the following, you should absolutely be taking both. And if you qualify, we'll even give you a risk-free trial of a pharmaceutical-grade fish oil combined with the super antioxidant power of krill. But first, you have to answer yes to one of the following. Are you concerned about your joint health? What about your memory and focus? Are you concerned about your heart health? Well, if you want to increase your joint comfort by 28% in just 7 days and promote memory, focus, and heart health, we're going to give you a free bottle of Krill Omega-3 Fish Oil. Just call this toll-free number and claim yours. 1-800-900-6118. We guarantee once you try Krill Omega-3, you won't believe the difference. That's why we're going to send you a free bottle just for calling. Call now for your free bottle and start easing sore joints today. Call 1-800-900-6118. 1-800-900-6118. 1-800-900-6118.
Have you missed a key step in planning for your retirement? You may have. Studies show that at least 70% of people over age 65 will need long-term care services at some point in their lives. The Federal Long-Term Care Insurance Program offers a smart way to help protect your lifestyle and remain independent should you need long-term care services someday. Now through June 24th, the FELTSIP is holding its first open season for new applicants since 2002. Learn more about this opportunity at ltcfeds.com.
Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit, presented by NITP, has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
It wasn't so long ago that collaboration was a bad word in government. Today, we know that the only way to solve our biggest challenges is for industry and government to work together to collaborate. At its upcoming Management of Change conference at the Homestead in Hot Springs, Virginia, ACT IAC provides an ethical and trusted forum to explore solutions to our most pressing IT challenges. Be a collaborator. Register for Management of Change today at actgov.org. That's actgov.org.
Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you just joined us, we've been talking about terrorism, the killing of Osama bin Laden, and also what is the new threat? We've been discussing about cartels and them possibly being designated as terrorist organizations because of the amount of violence and because of the amount of things they have been doing that have a major impact on the United States. We're talking to Fred Burton. He's the vice president of STRATFOR, which is a geopolitical, global strategic intelligence type service that provides information to not only Global 500 companies, but also government agencies, U.S. government agencies, in terms of terrorism, intelligence gathering, homeland security issues, and anything else that's going on around the world. Fred is also the former deputy director of counterterrorism at the Department of State's Diplomatic Security Service, and he's the author of a book called Chasing Shadows and the author of a book called The Confessions of a Counterterrorism Agent. Both of them you can find on Amazon and other bookstores as well. Fred, we were talking about the cartels. You know, as we look at the United States and we look at maybe the global picture, we've got the cartels. Should we be concerned about Al-Shabaab or other terrorist organizations? I mean, who should we be concerned about as upcoming threats?
There's two issues that I think are critical, and I don't think we'd have a handle on either one.
Okay.
The first is the lone wolf grassroots jihadi threat. Those are very fractured, very scattered, and there's a lack of command and control. So identification of those kinds of individuals is critical. We've been lucky in identifying a few that have been planning some very bad attacks on U.S. soil, most notably in Seattle and Dallas recently. The Times Square bomber fits that profile as well.
Do you think that there's more of those lone wolves out there than people realize?
I do, and I think as you look at what we would describe as a tripwire event with us killing bin Laden causes more of those individuals to rear their ugly heads, which presents, again, intelligence collection requirement problems for the FBI domestically. The second problem, again, is the cartels and the narcos and just the growing street violence and the impact to your average street cop here in America. And there's just a disconnect between perceptions. If you look at these two, take the grassroots jihadist and your average cartel killer. Somehow, as Americans, we view the latter as less of a concern, and I don't know why. In fact, if you probably looked at the difference in the homicide rates around our country, probably more killings have taken place because of Mexican drug cartels than Al-Qaeda.
Hmm.
But there's a perception disconnect that, well, these are just drug dealers selling drugs to other bad people or killing other drug dealers.
And so until it becomes personal, until they attack a place like New York or some major tourist organization, a tourist attraction or something like that, until it becomes something of that magnitude, these cartels will basically stay off the radar screen of America.
That's right. Until they kill the wrong person, they will stay off the radar screen.
Because we've even had recently U.S. federal agents who were killed trying to come back from Mexico. I mean, so even that kind of situation does not trigger it. It's still looked as a law enforcement situation.
That's right. We had the killing of the ICE agent. We've had the killing of the in Mexico. We've had the killing of the American missionary wife in Mexico. We've had the killing of David Hartley at Falcon Lake in Mexico. We've had Our consulates hit with improvised explosive devices. We've had law enforcement threats. Even with the killing of the ICE agent in Mexico, that's really caused no disruption to cartel activities in country.
Hmm. Should we begin looking at this in a new way? Because that's what I'm hearing, Fred. Should we begin looking at gang violence, drug violence, and terrorism all in the same picture? Because it seems as if maybe the money's made. I mean, Al-Qaeda has been known to use drug profits. They've been known to use human trafficking profits, just like gangs. I mean, should we begin looking at this all in the same picture, in the same light?
I think that we need to look at this from a national scope with our national assets evaluating this information and still, instead of relying upon perhaps a local sheriff in South Texas that may have possession of intelligence information, but he doesn't know exactly what he's looking at, and he doesn't really know where to turn. We have large portions of our border, Derek, that are unguarded just due to geography. Meaning, you have to put this in context, and you say, well, how could that be this many years after 9/11? Go and take a look, and you'll see for yourself all the different disparate moving parts there and how a bulk of the law enforcement activities are still very much focused on each individual state. I applaud the state of Texas for taking the lead to try to marshal most of the local and state authorities to focus some of their efforts in intelligence-led policing. That's not the norm for the border.
Wow. With this being the case, you know, we're talking about, a mindset change. Do you think that the rumblings are there? Do you think people are listening to something that you're saying? Or do you think that, again, we got to have something major happen in order for people to make a change?
I don't see a lot of productive activity for a desire to make a change on the border. I think there's a lack of political will in Washington to cause that to happen. And I think as we move closer to the 2012 election, that this issue will be, again, very political, and nobody's going to want to touch it with a 10-foot pole. So I've come to the conclusion, I'm afraid, that I'm not optimistic that there is a solution for the border.
On that note, Fred, let me just talk about the book in maybe the last few minutes we have, the last minute that we have. Talk to us about the book, Chasing Shadows. How's it going? Just give a quick overview of the book real quick and where people can find it.
Sure. Chasing Shadows is available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and any of your local bookstores. It's a story of an Israeli Air Force attaché gunned down in Bethesda, Maryland in 1973, and a 30-year hunt for the killer as to who did it and why. And I had a lot of very brave individuals come forward to help me, such as the original FBI case agent and the Montgomery County Police cold case detective, as well as the victim's family. So we put together our own little working group to try to figure out what happened, and I'm very proud of the fact that the book has also been published in Israel, a Hebrew edition, and it's doing quite well there. It's also published in the UK. So people like it. The reviews have been very, very positive. It's a good story on a political assassination in Bethesda, Maryland that pretty much nobody ever knew happened.
And it's relevant to today. Fred Burton, he's the vice president of Stratfor. He's also the former deputy director of counterterrorism at the Department of State Diplomatic Security Service. And he's the author of the book, as he just mentioned, Chasing Shadows. And another good book as far as counterterrorism called Confessions of a Counterterrorism Agent. Fred, as usual, thank you so much for coming on Fred Access. I know I'll be calling you again as these events unfold and as we start taking a look at other things that's going on.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me, Derek.
You've been listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch, Friday afternoons at noon, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.